Welcome back to The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. As we've been discussing, Hanukkah, the eight-day Jewish festival of lights, begins this evening. It's often celebrated with fried foods, which harken back to the story of the oil. As we heard, it was supposed to only last for one night, but there was enough to light the menorah in the temple for eight nights. And among the most popular and highly anticipated fried foods each year is the latke. And our next segment is dedicated to this fried potato pancake. We're joined now by Professor Leslie Kay. She's a professor of psychology at the University of Chicago and has defended the merits of the latke in a humorous debate they have on campus every year, the great latke-Hamantash debate. She also researches smell and cognition. Leslie, welcome to the show. And I might be muted on Zoom, but so I'm also going to welcome Chef Zoe Shore. She's the owner and executive chef at Split Rail in Chicago, a restaurant specializing in fried chicken. Zoe's also teaching a virtual latke and matzo ball soup making class over Zoom on December 13th. Zoe, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Leslie, I want to begin with you, and please correct my pronunciation here, but the great latke-Hamantash debate is a humorous disputation in which professors lay out their arguments based on their academic disciplines, like whether the latke or Hamantash is better for the environment. Can you tell us about the debate and some of the arguments you made for the latke?
Yeah, thank you for having me. The debate, you know, has been around since 1946, and it's run by University of Chicago Hillel. The idea is to make an argument that's pure sophistry and garden path reasoning. So you take the listener down a path to a you know, frankly illogical conclusion using your discipline and to try to make it humorous at the same time. When I did this in 2018, I debated against an economist, Paula Worthington, and a philosopher, Ben Collard, and I argued using biblical text, neuroscience, and a made-up, long-lost Platonic dialogue that the sense of smell is the holiest sense. And I went from there down, you know, a series of steps, relying on the ingredients that were sacrificed at the Holy Tabernacle in ancient times, and the composition of holy incense and anointing oil, to come to the obvious conclusion that the latke is better. So I still think it is better. I was assigned the latke, and I was glad I was assigned that. But it's a really fun argument, and there's never a winner declared.
That was my next question. Does the latke usually win?
Yes, the latke does usually win, and the winner is inferred by the number of donations given for one or the other.
I see. Okay. For people who may not be familiar, what is Hamantash? Can you tell our listener?
Hamantash is a cookie that's made, and it's a specific treat that's used that's eaten at Purim time, which is in the early spring. And so the latke has an advantage in that we do this during Hanukkah, on which the latke is the traditional food, and the latke is hot and it has a nice smell, and it's delicious and it warms you up in the dark days of winter. And so thinking about a cold kind of bland cookie at that time gives the latke a real advantage.
Zoe Shore, owner and executive chef of Split Rail in Chicago. Since your restaurant specializes in fried chicken, may I assume you would be for the latke in that debate?
I think that's a safe assumption, yeah.
So maybe you can tell us, what in your opinion makes the perfect latke?
Well, I mean, I think that's it's a dangerous question, right? I think different people have different opinions, and I think any kind of cultural food, there's always kind of a scale of what people think makes it right or wrong. In my opinion, you know, latkes can kind of range from like the very doughy, almost like closer to a regular pancake than a latke, like you would have like Russ and Daughters or a lot of Jewish delis that I've been to. And then there's like the really crispy, crunchy latke that's almost more like a hash brown, which is like what you would find at, say, my family house. But for me personally, I like something sort of in between. I think that's kind of the key, is finding that in-between texture where it's not just crispy potatoes like a hash brown, and it's not soft and doughy like a pancake, but it's got that potato crisp texture, but still has some substance to it.
And Leslie, what about you? What do you think makes the perfect latke?
I actually agree with Zoe. Yeah. You know, I have a couple of delis that I frequent because I live on the South Side. I frequent Manny's and 11 City Diner, and I enjoy their latkes, but really the best ones are the ones that my father and brother make after years of experimenting with the recipe and different types of oils, and the ones we make with that mixture of crunchiness and substance.
Listeners, I want to remind you, if you're just tuning in, I'm Brian Mackey. This is the 21st. Hanukkah begins at sundown tonight, and one of the staple foods of Hanukkah is the latke. So we're talking about that to conclude our show today. We're speaking with Leslie Kay, who's a professor of psychology at the University of Chicago and has represented the latke in the great Latke Hamantash debate at the U of Chicago. We're also speaking with Zoe Shore, owner and executive chef at Split Rail, which is in the West Town part of Chicago. Listeners, you can join our conversation. What do you think makes the perfect latke? We heard a moment ago that it's a dangerous question. There's a lot of wide opinion on that subject. We'd love to hear from you at 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. If you have any tips on what makes for a great latke. And on that note, Zoe, I do want to ask you, do you have tips for, deep frying? What sort of oil
Absolutely.
Is best? Yeah, go ahead.
So my number one tip actually doesn't have to do with the oil or the frying. It's, I think a lot of the time when you look at recipes that involve making potatoes crispy, whether it's French fries or hash browns or latkes, there's a lot of call for rinsing the potatoes and also for squeezing them out like as hard as you can. You know, you've seen that, right? Where it's like put in a dish towel and squeeze it or whatever.
Get that water out before you fry.
What's that?
Get the water out before you fry.
Exactly. So yeah. I actually don't do that. So I, first of all, certainly don't rinse them when I'm using them for latkes that starch is there, because that's going to help bind it. But I leave all the liquid in. I still squeeze it with my hands, but I don't go out of my way to remove it, because that liquid is kind of what forms that binding pancake around the potatoes. Similarly, I don't deep fry them for that reason. I fry them just in a shallow amount of oil, just a neutral oil. So canola oil, vegetable oil, whatever people like. Because again, I'm not looking for that crispy, crunchy hash brown texture when I'm looking for latkes. I'm looking for something just shy of that, like crispy and crunchy, yes, but not like loud crunch.
Is there anything about the size of the potato pieces that matters?
So I grate, well, when I'm grating them, like on a box grater at home, I'll use the smaller side of the grater. So you want to grate them for sure. But that sort of smaller side that's, like the narrower side of the box grater that has the smaller grating mechanism, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like that smaller, thinner grate. I think that helps a lot with making something that binds. When you grate them on the coarser side of the box grater and they come out kind of larger pieces, then it's harder to get it to sort of all stick together the way I like it. And it winds up with like pieces sticking out that kind of get burnt. So the smaller the pieces, the more cohesive it becomes.
So this is the point in the show when I confess that I am from a Catholic family, and yet potato pancakes were my all-time favorite food made by my first generation Lithuanian grandparents. And
Perfect.
Forgive me, they would use bacon drippings to fry the pancakes. So I know not kosher there, but can you talk at all, Zoe, about the cross-cultural aspects of the latke or potato pancake?
I mean, I think, you know, what's interesting about it is it is kind of just a version of a hash brown or, you know, a roasty that you might find in Sweden. Like there's that type of fried potato in every culture, including our own. And so I think it really comes down to a lot of it is just personal preference. You know, I am Jewish. I do not keep kosher. I'd happily eat many things fried in bacon fat. But I like using a neutral oil just because it's got a higher smoke point. Keeps it kind of cleaner, but I love frying things in bacon fat personally. And I just think that, you know, food is just one of those things that sort of brings us all together. And so many types of food, including the latke, have different reference points across different cultures. And you can say, oh, I did something similar like that when I grew up. Oh, I grew up Catholic, but my grandparents still made me basically latkes, right? And so, you know, Absolutely. That's one of the things that I really love about food.
And very much more in the hash brown tradition, as you were saying earlier. I also want to ask about toppings. Traditionally, horseradish is out there. What makes a good latke topping, Zoe?
I've always gone the traditional applesauce and sour cream route. In fact, the latkes that we're doing for Hanukkah right now, tonight, we made some nice applesauce with Granny Smith apples. You know, doing that sort of sweet and tart, some dairy and some acid to kind of break through it. Like, it's just like a really, really nice balance in my experience. But it's also kind of what I grew up. I grew up going to Jewish delis and eating it that way. So that's my preference. Also, sometimes here at the restaurant, we'll do like a little creme fraiche and some nice salmon or trout roe to kind of make it a little bit more, bring it a little bit more upscale.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. Definitely team sour cream myself. Leslie Kay, in the few minutes we have remaining, you're a professor of psychology. You study smell. And I want to ask, as you know, COVID-19 has changed a lot about our lives as we approach the holidays. And for some people, that's meant a loss of smell. And it's such an essential part of our lives, tied into these family traditions, these family foods. I wonder if you could reflect on that and what you're thinking about as somebody who studies smell.
Yeah, that's a really good question. And this is something that smell and taste researchers started noticing about last March. The reports started coming out, and there's actually a consortium of researchers, about 700 of us online, sharing information on this. And so, you know, it's a complicated thing because most people don't notice when they lose their sense of smell. And when somebody's really sick, that's kind of the last thing that someone would think to ask them. Now that we have knowledge about this, it's a comment or a question that a doctor may ask right away. But it's really pretty amazing that somebody can lose their sense of smell completely and not really realize it. And the interesting thing with COVID is that it can occur without a stuffy nose. Normally, we lose our sense of smell when we have a cold because air doesn't flow through the nose. But in COVID, it looks like it's probably an inflammation of the neural tissue way up inside the nasal cavity that has olfactory receptors that go directly into the brain. And there's a swelling or an inflammation or some kind of damage to that particular part of the nose. So airflow is just fine, but people can't smell. And so it takes the enjoyment out of food, you know, because the olfactory system is really tied up with parts of the brain that are involved in emotional response.
And this is one of the symptoms that we're hearing persists long after, you know, perhaps people have seemed to recover otherwise, but they can still not have. One of our producers mentioned a friend who seems to have thinks she got infected in November and still at Thanksgiving could not have that taste or smell.
Yeah, it can last a while. It does in most people, it recovers, not in everybody. And that may have to do with, you know, how much infection there is. And this is something that I'm collaborating with other people on researching. In most people it recovers in a few weeks, but also people can have disruption of what's called the trigeminal or chemesthetic sense. So this is the sense in your nose where you feel irritation or hot or cold from smells and food. And that can last actually much longer because it takes a lot longer for the circuit to recover from whatever inflammation is affecting it.
Well, all the more reason for us, if we want to taste latkes and other great holiday foods, to keep our distance, keep that physical distance, wear a mask, and stay safe. I want to thank my guests. They have been Leslie Kay, who's a professor of psychology at the University of Chicago, and Zoe Shore, who's the owner and executive chef at Split Rail in Chicago. Thank you both so much for being with us and sharing your knowledge and passion for latkes on the 21st.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
That is all the time we have for today. Our program is produced by Anna Casey and Ryan Wild. Our interns are Zainab Qureshi, Briel Skullark, and Chantal Vaca. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. Thank you to the band Public Access for our theme music. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Happy Hanukkah. Stay safe. Thanks for listening.